All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 187. It's Tuesday night. This is when we always like talking to you about whatever you want to discuss in college football. I'm Bob Akairi. I'm your regular host. Obviously, offseason is currently a little distracted by what's going on in basketball, but things in college football still occur, still happen, and there's always something to touch on. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and kind of just hit a couple of light news and notes as we kind of warm this up. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can always hit request in the bottom left of the Twitter app on your phone. But current topics going on right now, this is one I've been tracking this kind of story on the side because I think it's a really interesting idea coming out of the Big 12 because again, I admit I'm a bit of a fanboy of the commissioner. Brett Yarmark has had some interesting ideas. I mean, even if they don't work, he's being bold, he's being creative, and he's trying to make it a little more relevant and a little younger, quite frankly. But one of the interesting ideas that kind of came out of these things that the Big 12 is planning to do was create a Big 12 kind of Mexico initiative to kind of expand the market to reach down into Mexico, where there's a lot of football fans, A, and B, college football is also an appealing sport to them. Obviously, the NFL has played games down there. One of the initial plans was actually not to launch football necessarily, but put some basketball games down there, potentially some of the other sports. I know they were planning to have a couple of games down in Mexico City in basketball, and then potentially they were hoping of maybe even setting up another international bowl, because obviously we've had one in the Bahamas, which is presently being played in Charlotte, I believe last year, obviously, and then this upcoming year as they do some repairs to the stadium. But we've had games, again, in Canada, the international bowl, some of you might remember that. And we've had games internationally before, obviously, early season games in Ireland. We're going to have another one this season. Historically, we've had games in Japan. There's even been a game in London before. So this game in Mexico was also part of the plan. So originally, they were going to, this is last June, they announced they were going to host basketball, women's soccer, and baseball in Mexico, tipping off with Kansas and Houston in Mexico City in December. Now but they just said with the expansion of the Big 12, obviously they've got new members coming in with the four corner schools coming from the Pac-12. They just want, I guess, a little bit of time to onboard everyone. They're also adding a couple of sports as well, so that when they do join or when they do kind of take a move, they'll be ready for that. One of the amusing responses I read to this news on RCFB by actually a regular user, Citronati, the Big 12 first has to take a siesta. Which I thought was kind of a cute reference. But that's kind of a lighter news, kind of one of the odd stories that may have been missed. You know, obviously, we had April Fool's Day that just came and passed. I was having this conversation with Shahan J. Raja, who I host a podcast for Advanced Media Group. He's obviously with CBS Sports. It's called the College Football Survivor Show. I might as well just pitch that all out there. But he and I were talking about how April Fool's changed a little bit. They aren't really as many funny jokes, I think. Maybe it's because we're now used to things. He thinks it's because we're just used to false information in general. I think because, you know, with social media, best you might get an interesting graphic. I thought FAU had a cute one with the where better to host the Battle of the Coasts than off of the Atlantic, and the idea of hosting a USF FAU game on an aircraft carrier with a fairly okay graphic of a superimposing one on a ship. That was an interesting one. But overall, I mean, I feel like a lot of April Fool's jokes have been kind of mild in the past couple of years. It's an interesting transition. I mean, it's weird in the old days of the internet, which is weird to say this, but I mean, when I tell people, when I talk to like my own undergraduate students 20 years ago, you know, I realized it was like 2004. So I guess that I remember that like it was yesterday. So in those days, you'd go to a website and see all the stuff someone had set up. So it's not quite the same, I think, seeing a tweet or something of that nature. Another interesting kind of story. This is more for the humor of people who were responding to it. So Georgia Tech is doing some work on Bobby Dodd Stadium. As part of the work on it, it's going to actually decrease the capacity a bit by 3,000 spots. One of the responses, and this is from, again, these are from neutral fans in this, but, you know, 3,000 Georgia fans are going to be upset every other year, which I thought was kind of an amusing response to that. But I know they're trying to improve the stands. And sometimes when you get rid of benches, you end up with a reduced capacity. So I believe it's related to that. You know, I see someone has their hand up. We always enjoy having folks join. Again, you can always hit request to join the conversation about whatever topic you'd like in college football. I see Mage Ingrid. It's good to see you. Let's go ahead. So Mage Ingrid, when you get a chance, feel free to unmute. We can get to whatever conversation you'd like to talk about. What's going on? Okay, well, I'll just keep on going through. So, you know, another interesting story that kind of that's been mentioned on and off this week on various shows and things like that, and I think it's an interesting topic, is NCAA President Charlie Baker wants to ban prop bets in college sports. And this has been something I know that has come up. There's also been some articles about, for example, in basketball, some of the cleanup players on games that are already out of the way are being harassed over not, you know, hitting the over and the under on some of these particular scores. But the prop bet thing is interesting because obviously we had an NBA player who seems to have bet on himself, or at least bet on the under on a game he was going to be playing. You know, the Raptors, I believe it was the Raptors, I can't remember who they were playing. It was kind of misreported because people, you know, especially those who aren't as familiar with the NBA, were saying like, oh, he's getting NBA salaries, he's getting millions per year. Actually, it turns out he's getting, I mean, more than most people do. He's getting like $400,000. But the amount of money that was being bet was actually more significant in his kind of a salary range than it might have been for, like, obviously the bigger NBA stars. But it points out if somebody like that could do that, with all the college athletes, and obviously football is one, basketball is another, and any other sport you can gamble on, the ability to potentially get someone in on that kind of a, especially that kind of a bet, is potentially problematic. Now, whether or not it could be banned is a whole other question, practically speaking. But I know that has been a concern. I know there was obviously a little bit of concern around a Temple basketball game, Temple UAB. So that was an interesting story out there. Although, again, the practicality of it is a bit of an interesting question on whether or not it can be enforced. But that's one to look out for. I know, just kind of glancing at comments around, and again, you know, I'm going to bias myself right now a little bit towards our CFB. There's some concern. I mean, like, there's a couple of users that were worried that sports gambling, this isn't my quote, sports gambling is a ticking time bomb. There will be a massive scandal, blah, blah, blah. That's one angle to it. And certainly it could be, but certainly I wonder if that would be more likely to taint the sport with the general public than the stuff that sometimes gets brought up, like, oh my goodness, you know, NIL or transfer portal or, you know, opt-outs in the bowls. Those are all annoying. Well, those have benefits and sometimes it can be annoying, and I can see all of those. I think opt-outs and bowls are ones that are a little more annoying than the other two. But I think a gambling scandal would absolutely be a big damaging event for college football or college sports in general if it gets bigger and if it gets more pervasive. So I do get what Charlie Baker's doing here with trying to ban prop bets. I certainly could see the benefit of it. I just don't know the practicality of actually enforcing it. You know, Mage Ingrid, I'm going to try and let you up again. Sorry about that. I don't know if it was on my end or what. So I'm going to go ahead and add you as a speaker again. We'll see if this goes through. Feel free to, oh, you know, this looks better because I see the mute sign. Go ahead and unmute. Oh, Mage Ingrid, can you hear me?
Oh, you're talking to me. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now. I don't know what was going on earlier. So that makes me feel better. So, okay. I get paranoid because once in a while, once in a blue moon, this app kind of like has a weird error where the host can't hear the guests and all the guests can hear each other. So I've had instances where I've had to like, and luckily it's stable enough that I end my side and then come back in and it works again. But yeah, I was worried it was me and I'm like, oh my gosh, first caller kind of ran into that. But how are you doing?
Oh, doing good, sir. So it was just posted like 3 hours ago. So last night's LSU and Iowa game, it got over 12 million viewers. So in context, most college football games did not break that record. Only the CFP, High State Michigan game, and I think the SEC championship had more views than that game, which is really crazy. Because that game was good last night, if anybody saw it.
Yeah, it was a great game. You're right. That's absolutely a wild number. And I'm not shocked. I mean, we're watching women's basketball really rise up in attention and people, viewers. And I mean, there were some, I mean, the men's game still gets a lot of viewers as well. And it's an exciting tournament. There were some pretty outlandish claims that this was going to be the year where women's basketball might actually outdraw men's basketball. I think if that happens, it wasn't going to happen this year, but this is still, there's nothing to shake about this because I mean, if anything, the popularity of women's basketball this season has kind of brought up some of the lingering issues with, because historically, you know, in the past several years, there have been comments like the women's tournaments kind of run not the greatest, like they keep having errors. Then we had what happened in Portland with the 3-point lines being completely different.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm like,
what's crazy is it was like,
before, and like,
they already played, they played like three or four games already.
Yeah,
they played three or four games, no one noticed. And then somebody, I love it because now after somebody pointed it out, night and you look at the photo of like the screenshot and you
can
see
it.
Yeah, and you're like, how did the TV audience not notice? Because it's not like
I actually noticed on the TV, but I was being delusional, but nope. I'm like, oh my gosh, what the heck kind of mess is that? And it wasn't where the Trailblazers play too. I'm like, y'all ain't sitting fit the dang line. So like the last game was played in Portland and like it took that long.
Oh man, that is just so funny. You know, it's interesting too because for all the attention the Iowa LSU game got, you know, one of the other interesting things was one of the other Elite Eight games was UConn beating USC, my alma mater, but
yeah,
whatever.
The
reason I bring it up is that match, drew 6.7 million viewers. On its own, it would have beat every title game since 96 in women's basketball except last year's title game. So to say that game was already, you know, just shy of only one other women's tournament game, and that it was, you know, more than doubled by that, or almost doubled, I should say, by that Iowa LSU game. At one point, it apparently peaked at 16 million viewers, although the average is 12.3. So that's incredible.
When did it peak?
I don't know when it peaked. I just see that the data says it at one point it peaked at 16 million for Iowa LSU. And I know UConn USC peaked at 10.4. But those moments, I think they average it out. I admit I'm not a Nielsen like expert or by any means. But I mean that's great. That's wonderful for it's wonderful for just sports. You know, I don't want to say women's sports. It's wonderful for women's sports, but also sports. You know, I mean that's just great. To see that attention and see people kind of getting on board with that. That's awesome because the games were excellent. And I think that's wonderful. But thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, I mean, it beat a lot of college football games. I mean, that's incredible.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, I think also, to be fair, the tournament funnels interest. You know what I mean? We're all being funneled into the top games. So it's kind of like when you said the CFP. The CFP is funneling the neutral fans who would watch maybe not their team. Because, I mean, college football Saturday, just like college basketball with even more teams. I mean, if you're going to be following your team, there's a billion teams out there, even at FBS. I mean, there's a lot of teams. So the viewership gets a little diluted. So it's always fun to kind of see how it kind of coalesces on these weekends. But that's great. That's wonderful for those games. And that was certainly an exciting game in hoops for sure. You know, kind of going more to some of the other things going on in college sports. This one is, again, I always like to kind of focus on especially when looking at college football and administrators, I kind of like look up the line because beyond the head coach, you get the athletic director. I'm also willing to look above that and look at the university president because Arizona has finally apparently decided to let go of their president, Bobby Robbins, who will finish out his, I guess, term there. I don't know how the terms work at the University of Arizona. Not a big shocker. He loves Arizona sports, and he was known as a booster of Arizona sports. He was not the greatest at math, as it turns out, although we won't necessarily blame him for at least for being the one who miscounted over $100-something million at school. But it happened under his watch. So the financial problems that have been hitting Arizona, it was kind of inevitable that the president was going to be either ousted or fall on a sword or however they're going to do it. But That is going to be another change in Arizona. It's in a bit of a chaotic situation right now. That was part of the reason they lost Jed Fish. There was no way they were going to be able to bid enough for him when Washington came looking. And Jed Fish, in an interview, basically is when he, within a few weeks of arriving at Washington, kind of noted that he could, and it was a sideways comment because he didn't exactly critique Arizona. He obviously said he enjoyed his time there, but he said, you know, now I actually have a budget to pay for better assistance, which is something he couldn't quite do, especially with the major financial difficulties the entire university is having as they get ready to enter the Big 12. Another thing I forgot to mention last week, because it happened, I think, the day we had last week's show, and it's such a wild one, that Wazoo has, of course, lost their athletic director. Pat Chun has left for the same job at Washington. That has been a real blow, I think, to the Wazoo faithful and a lot of their kind of their pride, because I know one of my favorite comments was like, people were straight up comparing Pat Chun to Judas Iscariot and all of those kinds of things as being traitorous. But Washington, of course, they lost their Troy Dannon. Yeah, he briefly was there before he went to Nebraska in this kind of series of moves ever since, Ohio State hires the Texas A&M AD, Texas A&M hires the Nebraska AD, Nebraska hires the Washington AD, and the Wazoo AD was next up to make that maneuver. This is kind of, you can imagine why this is kind of getting at the concerns that Wazoo fans have for their program. Jake Dickert, he has a quote out there now that came out a few days later that I think could come back to potentially haunt him, in the sense that people asked him about the departure and he said, "We want people who want to be here." That works in recruiting. It's really awkward in a world where salaries can increase by quite a bit and people do start to look out for, well, you know, I love this place, but I also would like to, you know, have some even more, you know, potential money for my family, for my kids, however you want to look at it. And some people, like, if Dickert leaves Wazoo, that quote's going to come right back at him. It was interesting. The, one Wazoo fan kind of commented on this, Dr. Jeps. He didn't say he wanted to be here. He just hasn't had a chance to escape yet. With some fans noticing in Vodka Veritas, a regular poster from Stanford, saying that, you know, this was a coach that everyone expected to leave, but had a poor second half of their season and got no offers. Another comment was actually, this quote's going to be super awkward in a few years. Wazoo fan, aka D11, this could be super awkward in just 9 months. Provoking someone to ask if he's pregnant or not, but I don't believe Jake Dickert is pregnant at the moment. Another kind of interesting note, Dallas has said, the city of Dallas, that they're going to have a major renovation of the Cotton Bowl Stadium. This has been previously announced, but they kind of went into the details of it. A lot of fans who go there, especially for the Red River Rivalry shootout, however you want to say it, the place is a maze on the inside. As Carson Coffey, a Texas fan, pointed out, even if all they did was make it easier to enter or exit the stadium, it would be a big win. An OU fan said, actually, they're going the other direction. They're going to just make it a giant escape room. To make it harder to get out of the stadium. But some of the fixes that they're going to do, they're going to add 14 new escalators, have a multi-story entrance on the west entrance gates, increase some of the press area, improve their restrooms. I mean, I have heard from both fans and the press that is one of the most dated venues to see a game. I've been, one of my favorite comments actually I've heard was from Yahoo Sports Pat 40, who said, like, yeah, you're crammed in a tiny press box with a bunch of, especially for the Red River Rivalry, with a bunch of local beat writers and columnists who are being done favors, because those really do have a lot of sway in the state of Texas, more so than I've heard other states. But like, he's like, you're sitting next to a guy who's like 8 beers deep and smells like the agriculture part or the livestock part of the fair, and try to cover a major football game. So I've been told it is definitely something, it is an experience for all of those. You know, on the NIL front, and this isn't an NIL deal, this is actually a, it seems like almost a, I don't know if begrudging, but certainly a awfully delayed embrace of the NIL collective associated with their university. But Stanford's athletic director, Bernard Muir, has publicly backed one of the NIL collectives associated with the university. Stanford has been the longest. I don't think any school in major college football has taken the time to kind of embrace it. They were very resistant. David Shaw, before they let him go, seemed to be quite upset at the slow pace of movement towards that. I think this is something that should help them, particularly, obviously, they're going to be in the AAC, but we'll see if NIL, how it moves. I mean, as people have pointed out, if Stanford suddenly gets their donors and their big money to alumni to care about football, they would be theoretically unstoppable. But with all those, they have a lot of billionaires. They do. Gosh, what's the number? Actually, let me see. Someone posted one of those lists. Yeah. Stanford has, that's a crazy number. They have 74 billionaires in their alumni base. So if they decided to throw that money, of course, Harvard has 188. So if they decided to join FBS and win, I mean, who knows? But the joke is, I mean, most of the Stanford, those billionaires, they're tech guys who really, you know, they probably like the university, but they'd rather just get their names on buildings and not necessarily the football program. It's interesting to look at, you know, if you go down the list of these schools with all these mega donors, or not mega donors, but mega alumni, you have, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Penn, Columbia, Ivy, MIT, no shock there. Cornell, okay, Yale, again, Ivies. And then you get USC, which has still, USC has always been like, I always thought if they could flex that NIL muscle, they theoretically could because they are in that top 10 list. And then Michigan is the next one in that kind of FBS range of teams that have that kind of finance ability. But who knows? Who knows where that would go? You know, speaking of the Pac-12 and its kind of more laissez-faire look at things, there was a great interview with Bo Nix where he said in Oregon Live that the difference in the SEC and Pac-12 is, quote, hostility, and that he said it's almost like an unhealthy obsession. Basically, and again, credit to In Vodka Veritas for summarizing this, you know, Nix felt he was constantly stressed at Auburn because of how the fans and media treated it like it was life or death. But at Oregon, he found joy in playing college football because even when he didn't have the best game or the team lost, the fans and media were supportive and uplifting. Of course, one of the responses, and now the Pac-12 is dead, draw your own conclusions. To which case, people said Nix killed Pac-12 with his joy. Or as a Tennessee fan put it, emotional Nix kills 12. Having some fun with that particular angle on things then. But some others have pointed out he's not going to enjoy the NFL if he's worried about passionate fans getting really upset about in-game performances. You know, Will Johnson, the incredible DB for Michigan, because he's still on the team. He actually has one more year, even though he's just absolutely a tremendous athlete, one of the best players on the Michigan roster as they go into an interesting territory in the Sharon Moore era and whoever the quarterback's going to be. But he went on the record as saying Michigan's NIL was the main reason the Wolverines kept their core group together. And to be clear, for those who were kind of following that program, one of the big reasons that that program seemed to do so well, and one of the things that even Harbaugh was happy to boost every time he got a chance before this past season, was they had so many seniors. They had so many people who had been playing together, and they had a lot of, I mean, they had some transfers certainly, but they were mostly people that were more than other comparable programs, people who had been with the program. But it was nice to hear Will Johnson also say, yeah, but we're being also paid to stick together, at least enough to stay together. I do want to qualify that because, you know, Saban famously, while he was at Alabama, it was noted they didn't have to pay quite as much to retain players or even attract players because the people wanted to play for Saban because they knew in the long run he could get them in the NFL if they followed his system. And then the question is now Alabama might be paying more for NIL to kind of actually compete with the other programs that are competing for those very same players. You know, and this is something that I'll throw this out to some of you. If you want to add to the conversation, feel free. Again, if you'd ever like to join the conversation, hit request. There was an interesting post on, you know, a classic question, but I always like reading it. What does college football do better than the NFL, and what does it do worse? I'm going to go over some of the better ones because I enjoy these. You know, game day vibes in college football are better than game day vibes in the NFL. That was an Arizona State fan, nerdy kid. Syracuse fan said, being a Bills fan and you get the JV version of the college game day experience, being a Bills fan is still better than Syracuse, but not Penn State, in my personal experience. You know, with those videos of the Bills Mafia, I don't think I'm shocked. I'm amazed that those guys can jump over those things. Obviously, I'm sure beer helped, but to smash some of those tables. I like her. Texas A&M fan, that's not my statement. a username. He said college football teams don't relocate. That's always a popular one. Other fans pointed out tailgating. A lot of commentary on the atmosphere. I agree with this Ohio State fan, certainly ambivalent. The college game tends to be more entertaining. Of course, he acknowledges he's a Browns fan, so maybe that's why. But I think it is entertaining because the talent levels are more disparate. You're not going to get these thousands of players, and there are thousands of players at FBS going into the NFL, so you end up with kind of more wild games, unexpected issues, more creative offenses and approaches to the game. So I think these are, again, some of the more interesting things. It's always fun to see how people react to that. You know, another interesting question that got thrown on, and I see Daniel, I'll let you up here as well, that I enjoyed was, if you were prompted to be your team's athletic director, what would your first moves be? This is by a Washington fan, Mysterious Edge. And, you know, as a Washington fan, he wanted them to invest in basketball, add Wi-Fi to Husky Stadium, improve the game day atmosphere. And he asked fans what they would do. The top comment right now was from an Oregon State fan, Strawberry G5, who said, I would just probably cry, which was sad and funny at the same time. You got to feel bad for the Beaver fans right now about what's going on. Texas fan, Spicy Chili, would create a men's hockey team, a hockey team for the Longhorns. Another one I just have to acknowledge, Georgia Tech fan Hugo Stiglitz, 1981. He said, I would call the Big Ten commissioner, beg to join. If he's receptive to the idea, I would then sue the ACC. Otherwise, I would publicly express Georgia Tech's devotion to the ACC. That one made me chuckle a bit, I gotta say. So, Daniel, what's going on? You've been patient.
Yeah, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I guess going back to your question of what would you do if you were an athletic director. So I am a KU fan, funny enough. I'm actually going to be the new co-host of Rock Chalk Sports Talk here in Lawrence.
Oh, awesome.
I'm super excited. But I just want to, whatever Travis Goff is doing, he's laying down a blueprint for how other programs should be run. Travis Goff has put so much money into everything with football included. I mean, he's really upping the football game. He's, you know, extending Leipold. He's building a brand new stadium. He's putting that money into basketball as well, getting a huge guy like Hunter Dickinson, who came to KU, and he was pretty open about it just because of the NIL thing. I think Travis Goff has really figured that out. So whatever Travis Goff is doing, I think other ADs should be looking at it.
You know, I love that choice. I think I agree with you completely. He's exciting. He's young. I mean, I'm going to say he's young because I'm only like, oh my gosh, I'm actually older than he is by 2 months. Wow. So sorry, I just saw his birthday. But you know, he reminds me of Brett Yormark in the sense that they're both kind of, obviously they're now ones that they're in the same conference together, but they were willing to try interesting things, creative stuff. But also, yeah, watching the plans that are now for what's going on with, especially the KU football facilities. I mean, that's just incredible. That's tremendous. It almost makes you wonder, like, what took so long? Also, you know, I want to believe he obviously had to sign off on it, but was willing to kind of look that way. But I was impressed by, because again, they can't play on campus this season with all the work going on. I was impressed by the idea of playing the Big 12 conference games in Arrowhead, but then the non-conference games are going to be in Children's Hospital, the MLS stadium,
Children's Mercy Park, where Sporting KC plays.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Well, yeah, and it's a great venue. We actually sent one of our reporters when the final year they had the D2 title game there before it moved. Like, and that is just an amazing venue. I've heard nothing. I love MLS games. Let's say we've had a whole previous show where people just got really running with like a lot of the smaller teams, like the MAC programs would benefit from just learning from what the MLS does with their stadiums, but Yeah, no, I live here in the Twin Cities, and you know, Allianz Field, where the Minnesota team plays, also incredible. And you right. see them everywhere. Like, they're beautiful stadiums. They're interesting. They somehow, you know, the architecture isn't just, you know, especially for those of us who are old enough. Like, again, I'm as old as Goff. You know, I remember the 80s when, like, every stadium looked alike. You know, I'm not from the Twin Cities, but I moved here when the Metrodome was still around and the Gophers were playing there. And you'd walk in there, you're kind of like, what? Because I grew up in Southern California. So the NFL had moved out by the time I really cared about football. But I mean, I remember going to the Coliseum. That was cool. The Rose Bowl was cool because it's so, I mean, yeah, it's a bowl stadium, but I mean, it was the first, so or second if you're counting the Yale Bowl. And then, you know, looking at the, you know, some of the others are so generic, but I mean, yeah, this is great. This is wonderful for Kansas.
Yeah, it's huge for KU. I mean I grew up, I had season tickets to all the home games, and even as a kid I was like, man, this kind of sucks. Like, the stadium was not, it wasn't great compared to, I mean, I went to a game at like OU and I was like, this is like a castle compared to, you know, KU's. So yeah, it is amazing what Goff is putting into the Kansas Athletic program, the football in specific, and the way he managed to pull off the Arrowhead and Children's Mercy thing was unbelievable. And you know, there's a lot of, because I live, you know, obviously I live close to there, and there's a lot of Kansas City, Missouri people saying, oh, why is a Kansas school playing on the Missouri side? But it's like, yeah, Kansas is the closest team.
That's a
story. So yeah, yeah, it's,
anyone who knows the area knows why. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a natural fit. And you know, the two cities, the two states and the two schools definitely have, I mean, I can see Mizzou fans teasing about that, and I get that. I don't think K-State fans would necessarily should point fingers there, because again, I'm sure a lot of their alumni are in that area as well. So yeah, that's a good one. I love it. Yeah. And again, yeah, and he hired Lance Leipold, which is all you need to say. I mean, that was I'm glad he took that risk. I mean, I'm gonna just say the Buffalo thing still impresses me the most, because the idea of reaching down to D3 is underrated in a lot of ways, and hopefully more people, I mean, it's been played out quite a bit, but with obviously Kalen DeBoer being an NAIA guy who'd won championships, oh, lo and behold, once you get him in FBS, he can coach too. Some people pointed out, like, they have harder times at those lower levels. Like, Leipold arguably had an easier time only because Whitewater is kind of an established, was a D3 power. But, like, Kalen DeBoer was like, yeah, I had trouble. Like, he had to get the bus, even organize it to get the team to go places and to win. And it's like, you know, you get to FBS, it's like, everything's ready. You know, you just, even Fresno State, you arrive there, it's like, hey, everything's ready to go. You can just kind of do it. And then now at Alabama, my goodness, it's like he actually can just, you know, focus more on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue, like, if you're able to be successful, obviously, you know, Whitewater was a powerhouse. But the way, yeah, DeBoer, that's a really great point that, if you can win at an NAIA or D2 or D3 level, that proves that you're just a good coach, because you don't have the resources to be able to recruit these kids. So if you just recruit talent, coach them up, and be able to win, that's a testament to what you are as a coach. And I think that's, obviously you see that with guys like Leipold and DeBoer.
Yeah, and I just want to even point out, like, people may forget, like, Brian Kelly was actually a really good D2 coach at one point. I think it was a Grand Valley State. No, it was the one in Michigan. I always forget how they call it, because there's a couple of schools that use the Grand Valley name. But I mean, he was a solid coach. Or also, my goodness, who's the other one that's popping in my head that also is just, but yeah, there's a couple of these guys. Oh yeah, Willie Fritz. I mean, the guy has won at the national championship at a JUCO level, has done well at, you know, again, D2, did well at FBS, probably FCS. And then, yeah, like, has climbed up and won at every step. And I mean, rebuilding Tulane, yeah, it took a little bit of time because Tulane was never a built thing. But yeah, it's amazing. Who knew? Coaches who can coach actually can coach at multiple levels. I hope we see more of it. And I'm glad, again, you know, credit to Goff for willing to do that, especially after the fiasco that I thought it was more unexpected. I was expecting more things. I was expecting more things out of Les Miles. But
we all were.
Yeah, man. Because I thought, like, okay, after the Willis, because I mean, I also remember the Charlie Weiss, where the only time I ever saw, it was Athlon magazine, because they were always super boostery about any coaching hires. The only time I ever saw them give somebody an F for a hire. And I'm like, yep. I even then, I was like, there's no way it could be that bad. Oh my gosh, was I wrong? It was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, we were all the same. We were all the same way. We're like, oh, Charlie Weiss won a national championship. That's so cool. And he's going to come to Kansas. Like, what a treat. And then he was just there for a check. And I think we just ended up, I think we just this year was the last year of the contract where we were paying him.
It was recent. I know it was more recent than people realize. Like, he spent a lot more time being paid by the school than actually being
And then Les Miles was just an absolute disaster. That is the most heartbreaking thing, because I was so in love with him. I was like, yes, this is the guy. And he just – that was just such a dumpster fire from – oh, God. I don't even know.
Yeah. Awesome, Daniel. Thanks so much. And what was the name? So the show you're joining is?
Oh, it's a Rock Chalk Sports Talk. It'll be on it's a radio show. We're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Rock Chalk Sports Talk will be on KLWN and Lawrence, if any Lawrence people are there. But yeah, you can also check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, and good luck with that. And you're always welcome to come up and talk or stay up and talk, but I just wanted, it's a force of habit. I've done interviews before where it's like you always give a guy a chance to shout out their where to find them and all that stuff. I respect it. So
thank you, man. I appreciate you letting me talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, John, what's up? It's been a minute.
Man, I was about to say the same thing. It has been a minute. How you been?
Good. You know, yeah, I couldn't do a show 2 weeks ago because I was in Vegas with my kids and we had a show conflict. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'll take a break. Basketball was going on. I could see people in the sports books. And I just kind of point out to my kids, see, that's where adults gamble on sports, you know. But a little bit of that. I love Vegas. I've been going there since I was, you know, 5 and I'm 44 now. So it's my cabin. It's where I go when I need to relax. But how are you?
Hey, not bad, man. I was actually on vacation last week, so that's why I missed the weekly chat. But actually came back a little late tonight too, because I was actually I knocked something off my sports bucket list tonight. I actually went over to I'm actually in Omaha, and I was able to actually catch a game at Charles Schwab Field. Creighton was actually hosting Nebraska tonight, so that was a pretty cool experience just to see that whole place in person where the College World Series is hosted.
Oh yeah. Does that one bar sell Jello shots just every day? Like, or is that only?
You know
for
what?
The...
I meant to go after the game, but it is absolutely freezing out here. Yeah. It was raining and it was high 40s by the time the game ended, and my very stubborn self wanted just to get to the car.
So. I was gonna say, brother, it snowed today here in Minneapolis. It actually snowed for like hours, and I was annoyed because we had literally the mildest winter I've ever seen since I moved here in 2002. Like we barely had any, like no snow for most of the winter. And then just wild amount of snow in the last couple of weeks. Like it was snow on the ground on April Fool's. And, my goodness. Like, so yeah, no, I was, so yeah, I can imagine, but yeah, trust me, it can get colder the coldest I've ever seen was like one time again, how I ended up Thompson, Manitoba, so far north that Minneapolis is the halfway point to New Orleans. So I was there way up in Manitoba, and it was like it was snowing in June, and so there are places that are worse.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, the main thing I want to ask, and I apologize if this has been discussed today or discussed last week, is about player props. I know the NCAA is currently working on trying to end player props for various reasons. You know, the biggest one being because people suck and they want to DM players saying, "Why did you ruin my $5 bet?" Yada yada yada. I was kind of curious what your thoughts were on just gambling on college sports in general, player props, and just and my last part being, do you gamble yourself?
So here's the thing. I'm not a huge gambler. Like I have gambled before in Vegas, like even years ago, I remember, I think I bet I was in Vegas for the Oregon Ohio State Championship. And I remember I put some bets down at Oregon just to say I did. And none of them came out. I bet before and I've won, but I think I've literally bet on sports in Vegas my whole life 5 times. I'm not a big gambler. And it's weird too. I think maybe because I've been going to Vegas since I was a kid, I associate it with just a place to go and have fun. Lots of fun stuff. Let me tell you, if you want advice, you know, I got tons now, especially after this last trip. But I talked a little bit about it because Charlie Baker is trying to get rid of prop bets. I do like the prop bets thing. I think that is admirable because it's too easy to manipulate. With the way players, you know, betting on, you know, for example, basketball, number of rebounds or number of points scored, that's easy to kind of, there's so many thousands of basketball players at all that, especially like if you can bet on minor games, like guys who have no NBA future, no even Europe future, they're not going to end up playing in Turkey or something like that. Those guys, yeah, you might be able to get them. You might be able to get them to take a little bit of money because they're not getting the NIL deals that they're hearing about. They may not be able to get those just because they're not as interesting. So, yeah, you might be able to get them on a prop bet. That's more worrisome, especially when you consider that NBA player, I think it was on the Raptors, who seems to be getting in trouble for that. And his salary was like $400,000, $400 and something. So it was a lot, but not like people were confusing him as being like an NBA superstar. So if you can get into a guy like that and get him to maybe do a prop bet, you know, with all these college guys and men and women, to be clear, you can potentially find someone. So those are more concerning. I kind of get that because one of my thoughts and my earlier takeaway on this was like, with all the concern people say about NIL, oh, I'm going to stop watching. Well, people kept watching. Oh, you know, transfer portal's ruining it. People kept watching. Even the conference moves, people keep watching. I think if there's a major gambling scandal or two, that could really shake the foundation. That genuinely would piss people off. I think way more so than some of the other things. So those would be my concerns on that. But let's see here. Mage Ingrid, you've had your hand up, and then we can go back to John.
Oh, hey, got a question. So for this upcoming season, what game are you most looking forward to? Because for me, is one game is Alabama and Georgia again.
Oh, this upcoming season. You know, I am... There's so many good games. I'd love to see some of the new conference matchups. I mean, there's a lot of them. So obviously all the major conferences are going to have new games, you know, but I admit I like some of but it's funny too. I immediately think of a non-conference game that's got my attention, probably because after being in Vegas and because it involves my alma mater, I'm really looking forward to it because I'd love to maybe cover that game. It's LSU USC in week one in Las Vegas has got my attention because it's also it's going to be a great, like, how these teams stack up. Both these teams had good offenses and just terrible defenses, and USC was certainly the worst of the two, but both of them have done a lot of things in the offseason. So which team is going to have that edge? And it's one of those games where, and again, I don't want to oversell it, but, you know, they're teams that should be in a position where if you see a close game, one of them could come back and end up being quite good later on in the season and just be a one loss. And remember, we're heading into the 12-team playoffs, so a loss, even two losses, if you've got good wins, is not going to count you out. You know, one of the quirky things people don't even think about is the first four seeds aren't the top four teams. They're the top four conference champions. So we're going to have some teams that in the AP ranking are not in the top four who are going to get those first round buys because they're a conference champ. It's going to be almost certainly the ACC and Big 12 champ along with the Big 10 and SEC title game. So who knows? Will it be Utah? Will it be Oklahoma State program that makes it through and people weren't thinking of them as a top four team, but suddenly because of the new playoff, yeah, no, they are a top four seeded team because they're a conference champ. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, but yeah, no. So that's the one I'm thinking of. Hey, John, I know you probably want to we're kind of slightly out of order here, but John, what was in your mind?
Yeah, I was just trying to give my thoughts back, and I think you made a lot of good points about of course players possibly possibly get influenced to bet or mess up prop bets. Of course, I'm kind of favored with it as well, just because of just how bad social media has gotten. With guys, with this random people DMing, especially college kids, I'm really uncomfortable with the idea of a kid who like you said, a lot of them are not gonna go pro. Like there's they want to get a degree and play sports. To getting DM'd by a random dude who probably lives in his mom's or uncle's basement because he didn't hit his $10 parlay. I think that's just ridiculous. Unfortunately, in a perfect world, we probably won't need to do this, but we're at a point that I think it needs to happen. Personally, myself, I love betting on college football myself. It's always one of my most enjoyable things. There's nothing gives me a better thrill than betting on a Tuesday night sicko Mac game and hitting that bet. That's one of the greatest feelings out there. You get judged by all your friends, and it's a blast all the way during the week. And it helps me keep track of sport. The smaller teams as well. I think to me, mm-hmm. I can figure out how a team. I someone asks in the year, I see, you know, someone says, oh, wow, this team was didn't know this team was this good. I could say, I know. I lost every bet on them this year. But so that's just my overall feeling. I feel like this is fair since I asked you that I give my own.
Oh, yeah. No, I appreciate that.
Opinion on that. Yeah.
And I was just thinking, by the way, Mage Ingrid's question about the team, the game I'm most looking forward to. I should look up something to kind of set them up and answer to, like, you know, I'm looking forward to the new conference matchups, but actually, like, instead bring up, I cannot wait to see Stanford SMU in the ACC game. That is the game I'm looking forward to, or even better, Louisville visiting Stanford Stadium. Two programs that never, like... Louisville's happy to be there. Stanford can't believe they're now paired up with Louisville, because Stanford and Cal were notoriously elitist when it came back to the idea of Pac-12 expansion. Anytime will they join? Because you remember the old talk, like, oh, will they join Fresno State, San Diego State, Boise State, some of the better Mountain West programs? And it was always like, no, they're too good for them. And Louisville was always awkward. I remember when Louisville joined the ACC, there was actually a little bit of comment, because when you actually look at the U.S. Annuals and World Report, which I know is nonsense, but they were like the worst ranked FBS team. And that they were like, oh, man, what does UVA, UNC, and some of those teams think about that? But now to see Stanford, I love it. I love that. That to me is humorous, because they can be very egotistical at Stanford. I could say that as someone who has been a rival fan in their stadium and had them come as rival, because that band will not let it go. Actually, also, my goodness, this is the best thing for the Stanford band. I don't like them or hate them. They come up with really either terrible or interesting stuff, but it's going to be interesting. I cannot wait to see the kinds of things Stanford's band comes up with, especially in home games against, SMU, Wake Forest, Louisville. Like, they're going to have to come up with all new material. Virginia Tech coming into town. Like, what are they going to do? I can't even imagine, but that's interesting. You know, Daniel, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah. Hey, so by the way, I'm a first time listener on the Spaces, so I don't know. I'm sure you've gone over it before. But what are your takes on the conference realignment in general? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, you're a college football guy, but at the same time, you know, UCLA's rowing team is going to have to go to Rutgers on a Wednesday night or something like that. So, how do you feel about that in general? I understand money moves everything, but are you more of a fan of the regional aspect of it, or are you cool with the way that the conference realignment is going?
I wish it didn't have to happen, but at the same time, I'm not as I don't decry it, I think, quite as vociferously as some of the others, you know, out there. Especially, I think, and I don't blame columnists. It's great. It certainly gave them a lot of material, right? But you know, at the same time, it stinks. But you know, the Big 12, I think, arguably came out if you want to look at regionality, the Big 12 probably came out the best in all of it, right? Because, you know, what did they do? They added they brought back Colorado, and then, you know, you brought in the Four Corners schools, who were at least contiguous in some aspects, and have some cultural connection, because obviously some of the old border conference stuff with Texas Tech and the Arizona schools and all that stuff. So at least there's some of that. But yeah, it's annoying in a lot of ways. UCLA needed it. USC wanted it. UCLA needed it. I think that's definitely the. And I'd love to know. I don't know if anyone's ever figured out how that worked out. Did USC say we want to go, but we'd like to bring someone with you, or did the Big Ten said bring someone with you, and then they kind of said, like, all right, UCLA. Well, yeah, it's a love hate relationship between those schools. Having been there, because LA is such a weird town because they dominate the city so much. That was an interesting pair to see leave. But I'm curious to see how that goes. The ACC one feels the most awkward. The Cal Stanford thing still stuns me. And I think, I know John Wilner came on one of the shows. I think it was, a show I liked, Bruce Feldman and Stuart Mandel's podcast. And he said the pitch to Stanford and Cal was to stay in the Pac-12, and Stanford. And again, I don't know how much I buy into this, but John Wilner does seem to follow the Pac-12 pretty well when it was around, I guess. But Stanford would be the branding anchor of the four remaining teams at that point, obviously Cal and Oregon State and Wazoo, and to get the final say on which teams were added. And then Stanford opted instead rather to just go to the ACC and took Cal with them. Again, the idea of the private school taking their UC counterpart, like, all right, you're coming with us. to keep the rivalry, but also, you know, that's the shortest possible travel distance in their particular the pairing. But that was an interesting theory, the idea that Stanford would stay and be an anchor for the Pac-12 to rebuild with those other four teams. I don't know how that would have gone. I think there's a lot of hopefulness that Kliavkov may have had in trying to save that sinking ship. But yeah, I'm not happy with it, but I think people will get by most of it pretty quick. I think for the first few years, you're going to get, especially the moneyed alumni who are going to like, who like to go to occasional away games, are going to kind of like the variety in some sense. I think USC and UCLA are going to be actually a better cultural fit than some of the others want to admit. And obviously Oregon and Washington coming as well. So it's not going to be just them. I should be clear about that. But I think the cultural fit with some of the Big Ten schools is going to be more natural. I know, having lived in LA, that there's a lot of Big Ten fans out there. And that part of it's a historical pipeline. The whole reason they created the Rose Bowl was to get people to be interested in moving to Pasadena, right? I mean, the Rose Parade predated the Rose Bowl. And then when they did the Rose Bowl, they said, like, hey, who do we invite? Let's invite this Michigan team that's looking so good and get all these people in the cold in the Midwest to see pictures of, you know, let's go really back to the early days, the wagons with flowers on them, probably sketches of wagons of flowers on them, but to make them think like, oh my gosh, it's New Year's Day and they've got all this warm weather to have roses in California. Why am I living in, you know, Iowa? Why am I living in, you know, upstate or wherever, outstate Minnesota, Upper Peninsula, Michigan? I'm going to move to this state. So, I mean, there's always been a pipeline of people in the Midwest moving to that area. So they'll have alumni there. And unlike the claims made about New York City, people in LA will eventually go and follow, you know, the college sports there, at least the football games there. So that I think will be interesting. But am I thrilled about it? No, but I don't necessarily go bonkers about it like some have.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Stanford was the most surprising one. I came in a little late. I heard you talking about Stanford earlier. But, you know, Stanford, with how many prestigious alumni come from there, it was surprising that they weren't as big of a fish as, you know, like the UCLA, USC, the Oregon. I understand. I mean, their entire sports programs, I mean, what have they won? The Capital One Sports Cup, you know, however many years in a row, that kind of thing.
So, yeah, they sponsor everything. Have absolute insanely deep pockets and anything they want to. Like, they have so much money that one of the more fascinating things, and I've relayed this story in the past, but I got into a conversation at Mountain West Media Days with some of the coaches there. One guy was talking about, like, he thought I don't even know how it got to this, but he thought, and he wasn't being mean. He was like, I think the toughest job is San Jose State because you have the Silicon Valley prices and it's hard to get assistant coaches because you either get young guys who don't mind living in a small apartment, you know, because you can't afford anything, even on the FBS assistant salary, which isn't a ton, but it's the Bay Area. And, or you get guys who are empty nesters who just want to still coach because it's fun. But he pointed out Stanford, meanwhile, because one of the guys had coached at Stanford as an assistant. He's like, Stanford had this really rich donor build this townhouse complex aimed at coaches. So they would, like, the non-big paid coaches could have a place to easily live near campus. I'm like, that's what Stanford can do if they want to. But, you know, again, as I was saying, they've got the second highest number of billionaires of any university in the United States. So if they could get a couple of those tech guys to suddenly want to throw some money, they could do whatever they wanted. Unfortunately, those guys are typically not necessarily the biggest sports fans. And if they're a sports fan, they'll just buy an NFL team or an NBA team, you know? So that's always been kind of the thing there. But I agree. Stanford's always been odd in that way. They have a small university campus, beautiful campus, but it just hasn't had quite the pull. It's rare to have a private university that, when we think about it, there aren't that many private universities that can really pull people away. You know, USC, obviously Notre Dame is the king of that. And Miami, when they're really good, and a couple of others, obviously Duke is a basketball giant, but there aren't, it's harder to do than, and there's fewer of them. That's for sure. Most of them, when you look at the Ivy League, they just rather kind of stay a little quiet, even though they have the ability to jump up. Let's see here. Actually, there's two Johns. So, John, you had your hand up, and then let's go to the other John that we just left up, John Orlandi. But John, John without an H. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say without H, John is definitely a superior John, just in my own opinion. no offense, other John, but so I was actually going to speak what Daniel was just saying as well. I'll be honest, I'm not gonna go bonkers, but I definitely hate it. I hate everything this college realignment is gone. These super conferences, the idea that some of these teams don't play each other for almost 8 or 9 years at a time, that even though they're in the same conference, I think it's all just diluted. And I know everyone gets their money, everyone's happy, but I'm curious what the long term implications are going to be of this. I'm really, you know, from 10 years from now, how different the sport's going to look because of this. Oh, we got two Daniels in here now. Nice. But yeah. Remember when Rutgers moved to the Big Ten? We all freaked out. Man, good times.
Yeah, you know, one of the and this is a, again, listening to people who I thought had good opinions, learned people on the subject of college football, who threw out one potential and long-term development that might come out of how the playoff could go. If you see the playoff kind of start to reward schedules that are either more creative, or which I doubt at this point with the way it seems to be set up, but somebody thought, like, there was a theory where if, for example, conference title games lose their importance, and I think they may, if especially if when we go to the larger playoff, the 14 team model, and you have more locked in programs. But the theory was, if those start to go away, and instead it starts to become more of a focus on teams, you know, it different. Will we eventually see some teams want to be independent? But honestly, there was a short window where that made sense. And now, the more I'm talking it out, I think with the 14 team playoff and some of the nuances of it, that may prevent that. But there was at one point, I thought an interesting postulation that after 10 years, would you start to see teams realize that, really, you know, you can just make your schedule and go independent. But yeah, no, I think it's not thrilling. And yeah, I agree with you on that. So, John Orlandi, what's going on? You've been super patient.
Yeah, I just, you know, dropped by, started listening, and I kind of wanted to get your opinion on the two Pac-12 teams that are left, which is Washington State and Oregon State. They won that huge lawsuit, and with you know, SMU and all the defectors who are leaving, they're not getting full profit sharing for quite some time. I think I saw that Stanford and SMU have like 8 years until they start pulling ACC profit sharing, and I just wondered how you take of that, if it's going to hurt the program, what Washington State and you know, Oregon State do with all this cash. I want to say it was close to $300 million. I'm not quite sure the exact number. If they go and try and build the Pac-12 up again, mm-hmm. Maybe try and strengthen the Mountain West. Where you think that goes from there? That's kind of all that I was wondering.
Yeah, it's a good question. So They got into a question over how the lawsuit was about who gets to control what as the conference kind of winds down. And more or less it turned into a settlement where the teams that were departing just wanted to be. And again, this is part of the strategy that gets in the lawsuits. Like, they were willing to just kind of get to a point where they reached a settlement after a lot of saber rattling and some court motions. But they, as you pointed out, Oregon State and Wazoo are going to basically get the lion's share of the money for the next of this kind of payout of this kind of, like, just leave the whole situation, leave it be. That'll help them in some ways, because also they're going to inherit some of the liabilities the conference is dealing with, which are substantial, but not so substantial that they're going to ruin the payday completely. The best argument, the best way to look at it, is Oregon State and Wazoo will have basically about 2 years to kind of just rest on their laurels. And I point that out because I know the NCAA has said, like, look, after 2 years, we'll give you a couple of years to sort this out, but eventually you're going to have to come up with something because your conference is just too few members. We won't recognize a conference at all anymore. So it seems like with that in knowledge, and with the fact that now they have money to kind of safely operate for those next couple of years, they're going to do their best, try their hardest to get into some other conference, one of the P4. They're going to try their hardest. And the backstop to that is going to be, if it looks like it's not happening, then they're going to look to the Mountain West and figure out some way to either probably bring teams in. They'll probably be, quite frankly, forced to bring all of the teams. If they don't, that'll be an interesting situation, right? But that is probably where it's going to go. I'm not saying that they're going to necessarily bring in the Mountain West teams, but that's going to be their strategy. It's interesting to note, kind of as I did really at the outset, just kind of tossing, I meant to mention it last week, but seeing Pat Chun, the AD of Wazoo, leave to then take the Washington job really had a cut deep into the Wazoo Wazoo fans on the future of the team as being a and where even the guy who was at the head of the ship was thinking it was going. So that was certainly a concern. But at least of what's going to happen for those two, we're going to see them basically do their best to try and join one of the Big Ten or the AC, probably the Big 12 or the ACC. Most realistically, maybe it's interesting to think that what if the ACC, obviously we now have Florida State and Clemson trying to get out of the grant of rights deal. What if they leave and somehow I think it'll be a free for all if that happens. I think we'll see North Carolina have a bidding war by the Big Ten and SEC, because by all accounts, that's the most desirable team because it brings in a totally new market and is a program top to bottom that can compete in all sports. Even if it's not the best at football, they can certainly play pretty well and be a competitor. That'll be interesting. Georgia Tech would also be an interesting one. I don't think SEC might be interested, but the Big Ten would theoretically be interested in that. That would certainly bring them a very interesting team. But that's all theoretical. That's all. We'll see where that goes. But if that happens, then suddenly, hey, Wazoo, Oregon State, you guys still interested? Because one of the things the ACC has been trying to do, and part of the reason they were willing to add teams, is they knew that if they keep their team level at a certain number, the way their deal with ESPN was structured, they can't renegotiate the TV deal, which was locked into place until, 2036, as long as the ACC stays above a certain number of teams. So some of the other thought was adding those three was to backstop it. But again, where the Pac-12 teams, the two remaining teams end up, we'll see. But I don't know. Maybe I'm a little more pessimistic. I think they're going to end up going for a couple years and then eventually just kind of make that deal with the rest of the Mountain West. And we'll see where that goes. It's a good question, though, and one that is going to be burning in the background for sure. John, what's going on?
Hey, I know you're just talking about scheduling in regards to potential playoff appearances in the next several years. Do you think the NCAA or somebody will essentially put a scheduling requirement for teams? I say requirement in the way of, for example, like a Power Five school can't play an FCS school. In order to be qualified, they have to play G5 schools. And G5 schools, can't play Division II. They got to play, they have to schedule FCS or, right, or above on talent-wise. Do you think those type of requirements might come in just because, teams might try to get more creative scheduling and try to, try to get essentially a cupcake schedule so they can...
That's a great question. Yeah. I think it's funny because it depends on the team, because UCLA and Georgia have announced that they canceled a non-conference game that was coming up, I think, in 2025. And some people said they've got their Big Ten and SEC schedule. So with the one benefit of those two particular mega conferences is those regular schedule, those season schedules, those league schedules are going to be enough that the conference doing well in those conferences should get you, into the playoff if you finish in the top couple of spots, no matter what, regardless of those ideas of putting automatic qualifiers. I mean, so if you're not necessarily one of those teams, you may want to schedule a little tougher. But in terms of the idea of like scheduling a cupcake, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of changes there, quite frankly. Now, I just want to clarify, I don't believe any FBS team can play a D2 team. If they do, it's not countable. I don't foresee them changing the rule where only one FCS opponent counts. So sometimes a team ends up playing two for various reasons and only one of those victories counts towards eligibility. But those might only apply to the bowls, quite frankly, which are obviously kind of becoming less relevant, especially if you're not in the playoff. However, I would be shocked if the playoff, because for example, think about that. If, let's say Georgia, and I'm not saying they would do this, but let's say Georgia schedules two FCS programs and then also shuts out the entire SEC one year. I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh yeah, they're not good. Again, I think we're relying on the fact that the teams kind of know that there's a line. You just kind of, even their fan, because those home games oftentimes are terribly attended, when they schedule some of those cupcakes or the November SEC SoCon Classic football matchups don't always do so well. So I don't think we'll see, I think we'll certainly see them included. And I think certainly we'll see a lot of G5, P5 games like we always have, or P4 games like we always have. But I don't know if there's a real need to change it, because that is the awkward, or pardon me, that's kind of the surprising result of all of these two mega conferences, is the regular seasons for conference schedules are going to be actually pretty good. And at least it would be hard to throw too much shade on it. Yeah, I wanted to kind of just quickly jump through a couple of other, as we're getting past an hour, which is typically when I like to wrap up in the offseason, wanted to hit on a couple of other interesting stories here. One of the ones I appeared on, a real story on April 1st, which is always awkward, right? On three, I was able to poach Steve Wiltfong from 247. He was one of the major guys at 247. So the Fong bombs, as they're so called, are going to start appearing on three. It's always interesting to note, and some people pointed this out, because of the whole... There's Shannon Terry, if you don't know who he is. He's been the founder of Rivals in 2000. So he founded Rivals.com. Obviously, one of the real beginnings of the idea of recruiting being something you follow. Because when I was in college in the 90s, recruiting was like, okay. Like, I remember, like, I heard, like, hey, there's this new freshman quarterback. What's his name? Carson Palmer. Oh, okay, cool. You know, like, you didn't know anything about them. Like, a handful of kind of weirder fans would be really into recruiting. I don't know if that's changed that much. But, you know, but yeah, it was a much smaller thing. And then he sold it to Yahoo in 2008. Then what does he do 2 years later? He founded 247 Sports. And that was sold to CBS in 2016. And then in 2021, he founded On3. So he's got a pattern. So it's interesting to note some of the guys and men and women out there who might be part of the college football landscape that you don't realize there. But Shannon Terry and his On3 was able to poach Steve Wiltfong from 247. So that's a big get in sports media. Just to note that. Another interesting thing, and this Ross Dellinger reported this. I always love reading his reporting. He's always good at finding some of these interesting scoops. But this is one where I'm curious to see where it's going. And it's kind of a proposal right now. But it's coaching staffs. And the NCAA Football Oversight Committee has a legislative proposal this month that would expand the abilities of football support staff, permitting all staff members to provide player skill and tactical coaching instruction. Why is that important? Really, technically, I believe it's 11 coaches can actually coach players. That's where you get all the analysts and, you know, the infamous or famous, what am I saying? Infamous, the respected Nick Saban school for coaches who can't coach well and all of that stuff. I mean, all these guys coming on as analysts, they couldn't technically talk to the players, although that was probably violated quite a bit. But the idea is they're now going to go beyond the 11 countable coaches, which were the 10 assistants and head coaches, which will allow them to interact more. It would also maintain the off-campus recruiters to 11, but here's where it gets interesting. Off-campus recruiters were typically the other with those same coaches, but this would allow to basically create 10 new staff members as countable coaches for recruiting. And I was listening to some of this, Ross kind of talk out some of these theories along with some of the other guys, Pat Forty and Dan Wetzel in their podcast. And one of the interesting theories they came up with was, could you have a situation where, like, you just have one of these guys, not even like a remote work person, a remote work staffer, if you all they're doing is recruiting, like put them in Atlanta or something, you know, and have them just go out and recruit the Atlanta area. If you're Texas, your recruiting guy, like one of them just lives in Houston and works out of Houston. It was an interesting theory. And I mean, they pointed out, like, salespeople don't need to know the product that well. You just need someone who can sell the program. You don't need a guy who can coach. You just need someone who can sell. And I thought that was an interesting theory. Obviously, it's very early on. They're still proposing it. But this is an interesting idea, and I really am fascinated to see where that goes. Because, again, suddenly these analysts that are being brought on could go somewhere. We're running a little bit out of time, so I won't go into this. But one of the other moderators of RCFB, Commodore N7, I don't even follow Warhammer 40K, but he created FBS Legion, FBS teams as Warhammer 40K Legions. Amusing read. I recommend looking it up if you're remotely into this, because the amount of creativity that went into this, you know, the Emperor's Children, Texas, the Emperor's Children are all about perfection in all things and uplifted their dead world of Chemos to a paradise. You know, it goes on like this. Like, I won't read this out because I'm going to probably butcher all of this lore, but you're into sci-fi, if you're into board games and, I guess, you know, miniature wargaming, this one is a good one to see if you get a chance. I know it looks like this one was actually a story that was kind of coming out tonight from various sources, that the American Athletic Conference is, because obviously Oresco is retiring, they're apparently targeting Tim Pernetti as its next commissioner. He was previously the Rutgers AD up until 2013. And then he has been the head of IMG Academy, their president. So they're looking for someone. Again, he's a younger person, so we're going to see more blood into this, younger blood. But we'll be interesting to see where he goes from there. Lots of other stories out there, but I think we'll go ahead and slowly wrap this up. But, John, I see your hand up.
Yeah, last thing for the end of tonight, just because I won't be able to say this next week. Put some respect on Indiana State's name.
But, oh, has that game gone final? Or where did that go? I wasn't even paying attention to it.
Yeah, Indiana State blew out UCLA tonight. That was the last Pac-12 basketball game, I believe, as well.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Kind of unbelievable that they were not put into the tournament. And I think this performance has kind of, you know, frankly, the committee should be embarrassed.
Was that the NIT semifinal, by the way?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, excellent. Do we know who their opponent is?
I would need to check real quick, but I think it could be the other team also who should have been in the tournament. I think St. John's, who also didn't get picked for the tournament this year, might be in the final as well.
Oh, that'd be something.
It might be two teams that should have been in the tournament are now in the NIT final, and of course two potential mid majors or non mid majors who the NIT did not want, essentially, with their new rules
were so still
got in the final anyway.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Hey, Daniel, I see your hand up. I'd love to hear your final thoughts.
Yeah, hey, real quick. So this is my first time on the Spaces. I just want to know, you know, how often you do this, like what days a week you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give you a plug, I guess.
Yeah, no, I do these every Tuesday night. I always close with that. But we do these every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, you know, 9 p.m. Here in Central. But, almost every Thursday. Like, I think I've missed a grand total of two or fell on holidays this past calendar year, which were like, we weren't doing one on 4th of July. And I was out of town a couple of weeks ago. But, yeah, no, almost every Thursday, when I get a chance, and this is just a scheduling issue for me. We sometimes have odd days guests, like if I can get someone to be a guest, if I have the time to reach out to people. We've had head coaches. We had like actually Willie Fritz. We had, Shane Beamer. We've had athletic directors. We had TCU's athletic director on here. His name just slipped my mind. Some other people. We've had a variety of reporters. It's a matter. Like we had Ross Dellinger, I was just talking about. Stuart Mandel's been on here. I just need to get around to scheduling some more of those. I'd love to have Dan Wetzel. I actually enjoy listening to him talk. I think he's actually be a fun talking guest from what I've heard. But I'd love to mix it up sometimes. And then I'm not going to jinx this. We had a few emergency ones when, like, there's a head coach at the parts. Like, I remember when Nick Saban announced, we're like, okay, we better do a Twitter space. And that was a fun one because a lot of Alabama fans came on. Just basically, it was almost like a wake with fans just remembering it. And obviously, Harbaugh deciding to leave. That was when we did. Some of the more interesting stories, I remember USC and UCLA announcing that they were leaving the Pac-12. That was another one we did a couple years ago. That got pretty out of control as soon as that one started. So, you know, things like that. But typically, Tuesday nights, we always keep those to be a call-in show because we found at one point we were doing guests at this time and we thought, like, you know what? Yeah, let's talk to fans. Let's talk to folks and let's have a conversation. So my background is I'm one of the people that runs RCFB, but I do it more in the background now and I run our media stuff. So if I'm not arranging stuff like this, I typically, I've been in the stadium in the press box for the last, three national championships, four of the last five, and we've covered six of them with over the years, as well as some other reporting. And I sent our handful of reporters that we have, we're all volunteers, to games around the country. So that's my background in this, if you're new to it. And then we take these shows, they're recorded. Actually, I've learned how to record them live. And then I take it and throw it on just wherever people get their podcasts, if they want to have them available as RCFB Talk, you know, on Apple and Spotify, wherever they get their podcasts, just in case they want to hear themselves recorded and they don't want to use Twitter. Because I know X has become a little bit more difficult to access if you don't have an account, which I know has become a bit of an issue for some folks. And we want to make it available to everybody. But thanks for asking. I really appreciate that, Daniel. So on behalf of all of us here at RCFB, I just wanted to thank you all for listening. It's always great talking to you. Lots of great callers today. It's great hearing from people. Lots of things going on. Obviously, the NCAA tournament's going to wrap up in basketball pretty soon, so we'll have even hopefully more college football stories, especially with spring game's ending. I'm very curious to see who some of these quarterbacks are going to be. Michigan, you know, USC. I'm very curious. That's a low-key one. There's some injuries out there that have got me worried, like how well does Riley Leonard heal? Is he going to be an impact? I mean, when is he going to join and really get some reps with Notre Dame? There's some other stories out there. I could go really deep into that. If you want to hear another podcast, I do one with Shahan J. Raja of CBS Sports called the College Football Survivor Show for Advanced Media Group. They're the people that own like AL.com, Cleveland Live, Penn Live, anything live at the end of it, like Oregon Live. It's an Advanced Media Group site. So that's another way to reach us and what we do. But on behalf of all of us, I wanted to thank you for listening. Now I'm going to hang up and listen.